Mini episode 670 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Unheard Scene, your home for great music interviews of all stripes. Follow them on the web at unheardscene.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome, everyone, to the FDH Lounge Pantheon taping. We are taping for Pantheon 9, the best of the best in all walks of life. Rick Morris, your FDH Lounge dignitary here, along with a panel of fine FDH Lounge dignitaries that we have all had on the show previously, many of whom have participated in the Pantheon discussions previously. I'll just go around the table here just to acknowledge everybody as we get started. To my immediate right, my good friend, going all the way back to high school, he was a previous contributor to FantasyDraftHelp.com before there even was the FDH Lounge, on such niche sports as golf and tennis. Speaking of which, it's tennis drafting time again, Johnny. We need to get on that. But my good friend John Adams, a local artist representing all things hipsterism, hashtag Tremont, hashtag grass-fed beef. Good to have you in the FDH Lounge again, my friend.
Great to be here. It's always a good time.
It is. It's tremendous to have you in. One of two brother combos to ever participate in the Pantheon balloting, by the way. We have the other pair here, and they'll be acknowledged shortly. But his brother, Dave Adams, another of my high school buddies, one of my original broadcast colleagues at Sports Talk Network back in the day, where this thing started, the late lamented Sports Talk Network, me, Dave Adams, Ron Glasnap doing Reality Check, sort of a forerunner to this show, albeit it was sports only. So Davey was in the Pantheon when we did the broadcast in 09. That was a lot of fun. To his right, my good friend Tony Mazur, who you can now hear mornings on WAKR. It's the Ray Horner Show, correct, Tony?
That's correct, and I'm sure everybody listening to this is going to be tuned in, and I'm sure everybody listening to WAKR is going to be tuning into this.
Absolutely.
Because our core audience, we got to go after that 71-year-old demographic. That's what we're trying to hit every morning.
That's who you are hitting, I'm sure. Well, you're also doing some stuff, are you not, poking in on 97.5 with Jeff Kinsbach?
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit of that.
Okay.
And also doing a little bit of stand-up comedy, which
yes.
is funny because we were talking about this on the air, and this is when I knew how old our audience is, and we're talking about stand-up comedy. And are you a King of the Hill fan?
Yes.
Do you remember they lampooned an episode where they were talking about the Ray J. Johnson Jr. bit from the, remember that from the 70s?
That's right.
And they did this whole thing, and I brought it up on the air. I'm like, please explain to me why this is funny. And everyone who's calling says, well, it's really funny, but I go back a little further, and I like some of the, I'm not kidding, they said that, I like some of the newer comedians like Moms Mabley and Maury Amsterdam. And I'm like, newer comedian? They were 60 years ago.
I think they forgot Shecky Green along those references.
Yeah, exactly. Slappy White must be still doing some of those old Dean Martin roasts.
Oh, that's the audience you get with AM radio, but the AM radio station in Akron, yes? That's where people go to get their news every morning, their talk. You guys are the predominant station there, 1540.
Yep, 1590.
Or 1590,
1540 is the cheap sports station.
That's right.
That you can hear about, I think, five city blocks.
Yeah, if that. Yeah, 1590. Yeah, my bad. And, of course, with the stand-up, it's good to hear you doing that. I have enjoyed the times I've been there. I have particularly enjoyed, at certain parts in your act, glancing over to your grandparents, who were always chuckling naturally, no matter what part of the act it was.
Exactly.
They're troopers.
Exactly. I've since retired some of those bits, though.
But it's great to see their reaction. Tony, of course, as we go further on to the table, accompanied by his charming better half, Samantha, as we go further still to my good friend, Anthony Patrone, proprietor of the great show, The Unheard Scene, currently on a bit of hiatus as a webcast, but we did that TV pilot that you have been kind enough to welcome me in as a part of, and we got that out there. So TV networks, hit us up.
Still working hard. It's just about to be completed. We ran into a bit of a snag, thanks to our production guy, but still hitting it up. Still
no
trying
names,
to get
please.
It going.
Yeah, but we got that going. And again, great to have you in as a part of this. We were talking off air about this a little bit before. This was a joint venture of the Unheard Scene back at the late lamented Sports Talk Network back in the day, and this program doing the fantasy rock band draft.
Correct.
That many of us at this table were all a part of, and what a lot of fun that was.
All I remember is Paul Belfi got disqualified.
Because he cheated.
Because he cheated. Well, not only did he cheat, but the way the band draft was supposed to be, you couldn't have people who've been in a band together.
Yeah.
And he had, I think it was Carmine, whatever his name is.
Apiche was one of them.
Sammy Hagar and Carmine.
Yeah, I think so. And they were in a band together. And that was, who was that? Was that
Buck
Steve?
Woodward called him out on
Woodward.
It. Buck Woodward, his own partner from the Pro Wrestling Insider show at the time,
correct,
nailed him on it. Hit me up during the commercial break and said, Belfi cheated. He needs to be disqualified. So.
And then one of our judges went, you know, I thought that was right.
Yeah. So, and to make it even better, I think he would have won. Instead, FDH Entertainment editor Samantha Jones ends up winning. I finished in second, and I screwed over Matt Patrone by taking four out of his six guys, which I will always find funny.
Who always held the concept for doing that.
Yes.
It was his idea.
Yeah.
Some still have sore memories on that.
Yes, well, that's the way it goes. Why don't we just do the acknowledgement here while we're at it, too? Matt Patrone, also of the Unheard Scene, my fellow producer, along with Anthony on the Revival for Television. So looking forward to making that happen. And getting good old Joe Vitale out there along with Lisa Dillon, our fine co-hosts for that. So that will be awesome.
Yeah, that'll be a good time. I can't wait for that to go big. Everybody, like Ricky said, TV shows, channels, come on, pick us up.
Absolutely. Hit us up. And my good friend here that I want to get to subsequently, the only gentleman at the table sitting here with me that is a fellow FDH Lounge original dignitary. He was there. We're doing this around the anniversary of the program. January 14th, 2007, he was there at the outset for this. He's been part of the project from the very beginning. My good friend, local political domo, Christopher Galloway. Chris, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, and I just want to announce my soon-to-be podcast, The Unseen Herd.
That is, well, as a podcast, that works well, actually.
I think that would work well with politics.
Really would.
It probably would. It probably would. And my understanding of it is these days, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but for anyone that is going through Northeast Ohio, in particular Concord Township, that little slice of heaven, they have to pay a personal toll to you as they're going through town. Is that not correct?
That's correct, and I only take Italian lira.
Okay. All right. So he's choosy on that, people. Beware of that when you go through. So these are our participants here to help go through the balloting that has been done. We have conducted among the vaunted group of the FDH Lounge Academy of Arts and Sciences, a couple of dozen folks who had ballots distributed to them, mostly show contributors, a few folks beyond that mix, and we ended up in all with 22 ballots that came in, and we're going to be going through them here today. What I'm going to do, first of all, is just run through the ones that only got one vote. We're going to have to break ties in two categories. Coincidentally, they are our first two categories. First one we're going to do is baseball pitcher. Second one we're going to do is underappreciated athlete. For baseball pitcher, the ones that only got one vote, going down the list here, Pedro Martinez got one vote from Alex Slemp. Ron Glasnap voted for Roger Clemens. He was the only one to go in that rather controversial direction. Roids. And as I'm looking at this here, I don't think anybody else got just one vote. So this is interesting. We tended to kind of clump towards a couple of candidates here. There were two votes, one of them just before we got the mics going here, two votes for Greg Maddox, FDH Director of Research Nate Noy, with one of the two votes, and he pointed out in his rather long-winded but welcome email to me all of the case to be made for Greg Maddox, that 92 to 95, that peak during the Royd era, that what he did was really, truly special. Additionally, another vote cast by somebody at our table here, as I say, right before the mics went on, Tony Mazur with another vote for Greg Maddox. So, Tony, what's your case for him? Is it along the same lines as Nate, or what were you looking at?
Well, yeah, it was, like you said, from 92 to 95, he was the best pitcher in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in 1995, boy, they screwed that up with the Cy Young and the MVP.
Yep.
I mean, first of all, how on God's green earth did Albert Bell not win the MVP that year. I mean, I know how he didn't win it,
right?
Because he was boorish to some of the some of the voters and everything. They got
Anna Storm didn't have a vote, did she?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or the. Or the kids he chased through the graveyard. I think, But then on the other side, they gave it to Barry Larkin. And
right.
That should have gone to Greg Maddux, who went 19-2 that year with, like, mm-hmm. I think a 1.66 ERA. It was something, like, mm-hmm. microscopic in that year where guys were hitting 40, 50 home runs in that time. Maddux was not an overpowering pitcher. He was not going to throw 95, 100 miles an hour. He threw 91, maybe 92. But he can paint, and that's when he always said he always looked to location. And mm-hmm. I'll always remember the one time he faced Dave Martinez. Remember Dave Martinez?
Yes.
He was a Punch and Judy outfielder with, like, the Montreal Expos or something. Maddux gave up a home run to Dave Martinez. Someone asked him, what's your favorite moment that you've ever had in baseball? It's like, was he winning the 95 World Series? And he said, no, it was striking out Dave Martinez because he burned me one time in the ninth inning. So it was the exact same scenario years later, and I got to strike him out, and it was redemption. And I said, I love Greg Maddux for that.
You got to like that. He was a hell of a pitcher. He was a great, great competitor, no doubt about it. One of his contemporaries here got two votes as well. There were two votes for Randy Johnson, one from Ben Chu, and another one cast by a good friend, our FDH golf editor, Tom Denk, Mr. Flatstick. He voted for Randy Johnson as well. There were three votes for Walter Johnson. And again, this is a category that we had back from the Pantheon Purge, which was a concept that Chris came up with, which I think was very, very necessary, where we purged some of our unworthy winners, voted them out. Nolan Ryan was a previous winner in this category, hence he was ineligible. I say all this at this time. I'm remembering this because I voted for Walter Johnson previously, and I voted for the big train again this time here, somebody who had an absolute strong record in the 20s in particular of just being so overpowering. Not a guy who's a household name in the game. There's another old-timey guy who got even more votes than he did, which we'll be talking about subsequently, but Walter Johnson could just do it all, and the hardest thrower of his time, I believe. That was a vote also by original FDH Lounge dignitary Tim Faust. Something about the originals gravitating towards this guy. The third vote for Walter Johnson came from this table. Chris Galloway, you joined us in that regard in voting for the big train.
I did, and, you know, I would back that up with just some of the amazing stats. 21-year career. 12 seasons he led Major League Baseball in strikeouts. He had over 3,000 strikeouts. He was the original member of the 3,000 strikeout club. He is still the career leader in shutouts, second in all-time wins. He's fourth in complete games. You know, he did it all. I mean, that's a long time for a starting pitcher, and his success, and I think we're not going to see that again.
No. No, we're not. It's an amazing record. Again, you did a great job of summing it up. That's a lot of the things I was looking at, and that's what moved me in his direction. We had three votes for another candidate as well, Cleveland's own Bob Feller. Nick Despins cast a vote for him, as did Bob Glassman, as did Dave Adams. Those votes came in for Bob Feller, but it was not enough to put either Walter Johnson or Bob Feller, each of them falling one vote shy of being in a tie here, and this is the tie that we have to break in terms of Cy Young and Tom Seaver. Not often two names you hear juxtaposed side by side, but they are in the FDH Lounge here. These are the ones that we had. Interestingly enough, for Tom Seaver being a great pitcher for different teams here, predominantly the Reds and the Mets, and I think that's one of the things that registered for him, because Tom Seaver, one of these rare guys who's able to draw from homers in two fan bases, the Reds. There was a vote for him from Scott Pullins, and a vote from Mets homers, Russ Cohen, voting for him. So somebody who's able to draw from the extreme partisans of two different fan bases. There were two other votes that came in that I don't think were from either Mets or Reds fans. Jason Jones voted for him, as did Steve Cervillo. So those four votes were for him. Cy Young is the other one who got four votes. And the votes that came for Cy Young were from FDH Entertainment editor Samantha Jones. Good old Mike Petak, our motorsports editor, voting for him as well. Kyle Ross, aficionado on all things football and wrestling in the lounge here, voting for Cy Young. As did, of course, John Adams sitting here at the table with us. So John, as somebody who voted for Cy Young, make the case, because we're going to be having to vote here on the tiebreaker. So for anybody that should be going for Cy Young, what are the things you're looking at?
Well, most importantly, 511 wins. So I think that says it all right there. But also, amazingly, won the Triple Crown in 1901.
Whoa, I didn't know that, actually.
So
RBI,
home runs, batting average. So
wow.
Little something to add in there. So.
Yeah, well, it was a different time, obviously, but okay. That's an incredible statistic as well. And I would guess most people probably didn't know that. So, all right, we have to break the tie here. Second ballot, the way that we've always done it previously in the lounge, is that you can vote for anybody other than who you voted for on your first ballot. The Patrons taking a bye in this category here, as they are not much into the world of baseball. So we'll be conducting the second ballot without them as well. So we'll just start the other end of the table here. Second vote here, Chris. It doesn't have to be for Tom Seaver or for Cy Young, but it could be for anybody. But who would you vote for on a second ballot?
Well, I would, if I was going to do this the way that I have advocated in the past, I would cast that vote for Cy Young.
Okay. I think that's pretty strong. I'm going to join you in that regard and just make it six votes, because I kind of agree. If I'm going to look between these guys, that's how I would kind of look to do it. So going around the table here, Tony, what's your sense? It doesn't have to be for either of these guys on the second ballot, but what are you thinking?
I was going to go with Tom Seaver because of his longevity and what he was able to do. And like you mentioned, the two fan bases that look very highly on him. And he was the one who ended up kind of changing that. By the mid-70s, you had free agency, you had blockbuster trades. You didn't have that in baseball before that.
Mm-hmm.
You just had guys just signing one-year deals and just going elsewhere. This was a massive move for him to go to the Cincinnati Reds, and especially being in that era and going from the Miracle Mets back then and facing those National League teams that just had some real studs during those years. So I'm just going to say I'll just go with Seaver just to be different.
Okay.
Why not?
All right. No, I mean, it's a great case to be made. And as I said before, you don't often hear the two names back-to-back, and that's not – to say that Tom Seaver isn't one of the all-time greats, but just that it's a guy earlier in the century, it's a guy later in the century. It's just kind of a random pairing, it kind of seemed to me. It could have been kind of any two guys in there, although Cy Young, again, is the most famous probably of any of them because of, having the award named after him, for one thing. And as Johnny said, 511 votes. So, Johnny, you're not eligible to vote for Cy Young, but unless you vote for Tom Seaver inexplicably here and throw it back into a tie, it's going to be him. So what's your vote?
Of course, I'll stay with Cy Young. But impressive career from Tom Seaver, especially with the two fan bases and the longevity, and was still a factor late in his career, pitching with the White Sox late in his career.
Right.
In the mid-'80s. So,
all right.
Definitely worthy of the discussion.
All right, so just going with your first ballot vote for him here, that's 6-5. For Cy Young, and again, it's a very good competition between him and Tom Seaver. We had an excellent list of candidates here this time. Bob Feller, of course, with three votes. Walter Johnson with three. Randy Johnson, two. Greg Maddux, two. This is not the way that it went the last time, where the balloting went for Nolan Ryan, and it just seemed to be kind of a shallow kind of a thing amidst the way that a lot of us, I think, were looking at it. Unfortunately, during that balloting, I will tell you, subsequently on the show, when we had on Jason Stark from ESPN, he had a book about the most overrated players in baseball, and on the list was Nolan Ryan. And he said that the point of the book was, it's not that these guys suck, we're not saying they're overrated because they suck, but they're not as good as a lot of people think they are. And I brought that up. I said much to my frustration, he ended up being voted in our competition as the greatest pitcher of all time, greatest right-hand. He had him as the greatest right-handed pitcher. We had him as the greatest pitcher overall. And Jason Stark said that would be an excellent example of what I'm talking about.
Well,
it's nice to have a more worthy winner this time, Tony.
Well, that was the problem with Nolan Ryan was he also lost a lot of games too.
He did.
He would also give up a lot. He'd beaten a lot of guys, give up a lot of hits. I mean, he was a great pitcher, but he was, I think, one of the few guys to have played in four decades. So,
yeah.
Which of course you don't see nowadays. You have
right.
a pitcher that lasts about 3 years, and then they're out of baseball.
Right.
Hint, hint, Vinny Pastano. But
yes.
When you're looking at all these, he was around from, he was on, like we mentioned with Tom Seaver, he was on the Miracle Mets, and then ended up playing for the 93 Texas Rangers.
Right.
So it was an incredible career he had, but, yeah, I will agree with Jason Stark there. One of the few times I agree with Jason Stark.
Yeah, it was a good point that he made there, and I thought that sort of captured exactly the case for why he needed to be purged. And like I said, I want to take my hat off to Chris for the concept of the purge. The last two times around, we have been addressing purging folks from the lounge and refilling those categories. We are going through the last of the refilling today. And, of course, for the baseball pitcher, it is Cy Young. So, as is always the case, we lift the Dundee Award and we salute Cy Young, the greatest pitcher of all time, the best of the best, according to the FDH Lounge Pantheon. All right, so up next we have the underappreciated athlete. And this was as fragmented as it was the first time around. The first time we went through, this was a purged category. Kenny Lofton somehow made the cut as best underappreciated athlete of all time. And the commonality here tended to be in this category. Nobody voted for the same person, so this should be a very interesting tiebreaker. But most of us, it seemed like, were voting for players that were either superstars that we thought should have been regarded as transcendent superstars or stars that perhaps should have been regarded as superstars. That seemed to be it. There weren't really too many under-the-radar guys here. And we've done under-the-radar before for a category. But this one was not the way that it went. It was not at all as I expected it, Chris. This is the most fragmented category of all time.
This is exactly what I expected.
Okay.
And I take underappreciated athlete differently.
Yes, me
in
too.
My vote, because I look at it and say someone who's had documentaries written about their greatness and they've had shows and they've had millions of dollars in multiple sports or
right
or you know earnings deals and you know their household names. I don't consider that kind of person an underappreciated athlete.
I don't
either.
They're
well appreciated.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I will. I'll take this opportunity to launch into my diatribe about process.
Please, because I want to ask you a question. I got your email this week. Why don't you talk about that?
Well, I've been a big fan of the Pantheon, but I also have been an advocate for and therefore the purge idea that the threshold should be a lot higher than winning something out by a vote of 4-3.
Okay.
And I look at this underappreciated athlete category and I say to myself, there's absolutely zero consensus here. And so if somebody were to string together two votes, I don't think that should launch them into the Pantheon.
Okay.
And so I feel like if someone's going to get into the Pantheon, it's because there is a strong consensus to put them there. And especially in this category, I would suggest that there isn't one. And I would say we can have a discussion about some of these people, but I don't know that unless people are going to be changing their minds or being swayed, that we're going to have a vote that would be, in my mind, valid.
Now, this is something I wanted to ask you about because I was sort of drawing an analogy in my mind when I read your email. And that being in terms of going back here and talking about the very origins between you and I. Me, you, a couple other fellas got to be friends running down in the political circles down at Ohio University, the Harvard on the Hocking. Or perhaps Harvard is the Ohio on the Charles, as I've heard. But I'm not sure which way that goes. But anyways, you're the one guy who is stuck with it. You're the one guy still fully doing that stuff to this very day. So I'm thinking to myself, I wondered if you were influenced in making this point at this time. We're a couple of weeks out from Iowa. We're a couple of weeks out from New Hampshire. We're looking at a situation where whoever wins, at least on the Republican side, probably going to be about 30%. Hence, 70% will be voting against whoever wins. Was that at all as kind of a thought in your head as far as a similarity, or was it just me that drew that point of comparison?
Yeah, absolutely not a thought in my head at all.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, so I'm reaching there.
I was simply looking at the fact that we've got a list of great athletes on in front of us. Mm-hmm. There's no consensus. And so how can somebody go into the Pantheon with a very small amount of votes?
All right. Well, the best way to do this probably
I will say this. You do make a great point in terms of when it comes to majority of vote. You know, Cy Young gets in, but even though if you actually total up original votes, he's getting in with only 30% of the votes.
Sure, yeah. I was thinking that plurality thing was kind of just sticking in my head there. So
I agree with Chris. When you got that many choices that you can choose from, maybe next time do by sport.
Okay. That's true.
Because then you can narrow it down some, at least. You could do just football.
I mean,
or
we
just
have
just baseball.
We even have individual sports listed here.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's which I didn't expect, but that's.
I gotta really agree too.
Okay.
Simply because now, you can make a case for anybody on this list.
Okay.
Okay. The difference becomes when we do a second vote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would tend to agree and want to vote again for somebody else on the list.
Right.
But because of the rules of the tiebreaker.
Yeah, can't vote
you
for your
can
own.
Can vote for anybody.
That's right.
That doesn't mean that the others sitting at this table are going to vote for anybody on this list.
Yeah, so it could be four or five votes for one person by the time we're done. The way that I want to do this is to run through the votes of everybody not at the table, and then as we go through, when we're going around the table here, because of the special circumstances of this one, we should take a minute with each person and have them make a case for why they went that way. So I don't know if that's going to alleviate things at all, Matt, or not.
I don't know, but like I look at this list, and I'll admit I'm not one of the biggest sports guys here. I'm
okay.
The least sports guy here. But 90% of these names I know.
Yeah.
And how can they be underappreciated athletes if I know them? You know?
That's right. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. And some of the ones here that were put on the list where votes came in from our FDH Lounge Academy of Arts and Sciences folks not at this table here. Good old Ben Chu, my good buddy out in Portland, Oregon, voting for Antonio Gates. Good friend, longtime friend, another member of the aforementioned Athens crew, Scott Pullins, voting for Pete Rose. Tom Seaver, Pete Rose. No homerism there, but okay. We're all allowed to set our own criteria. You know, it is what it is. Nick Despin's going with David Robinson. Alex Slemp voting for Mike Piazza, even before Mike Piazza was voted the other day into the Baseball Hall of Fame, thereby making him less underappreciated.
I was just about to say, boy, a Hall of Famer that's underappreciated. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
we have a few of those on this list.
You're gonna love my vote.
Well, we do, but I'm not sure we're gonna chew over anybody's more than Matthew when we get around to him. But after Kyle. I'm sorry, after Alex's vote is Kyle Ross with Tim Brown. Russ Cohen voting for Jerry Rice, who is pretty much the consensus greatest wide receiver of all time. So I'll be very interested to know.
He's so underappreciated because he was so much better than even that.
Yeah.
So even though you think he's the greatest wide receiver of all time, he's still underappreciated.
I know Russ lives in the Philly area, but right about now I wish he was here with us. Russ, what is this? How did he get that vote? Ron Glasnap, at least, you know, borderline. Well, compared to the Jerry Rice one, I think a lot of these are more understandable. He went with John Smoltz, who, if I were to guess, I would say Ron probably meant that as somebody who spent not exactly half and half, but half his career as a starting pitcher, half as a closer, maybe he doesn't get enough full credit for both or for his versatility, or I don't exactly know what the thought process was there. I'm just guessing. Mike Ptak going with Charles Woodson. Nate Noy, this did not surprise me, going with Bo Jackson, who is a perennial favorite of his. And I know that Nate lives in continual fear that the next generation and those that weren't around then, by gum, didn't know how great Bo Jackson was and how transcendent an athlete he was. That's how he looks at it.
How can Bo Jackson be considered underappreciated? Go. Give me the answer.
I mean, he's not on everyone's lips today because he faded from the scene, so there is that. You know what I mean? But that's, I don't know.
Well, there's a difference between being underappreciated and fading away.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I
would agree with that.
Isn't there a 30-on-30 on him?
There is,
I mean,
yeah.
I assume he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
No.
Is he not?
He wasn't playing long enough to be in either one. No, he didn't
make
the cut for either one.
Interesting. Well, I would have said
nor should he, really. I mean, he was like 28 or 29 at the time he went down. So that's, I think maybe he means
because his career got cut short with the injury?
Cut short, yeah. And like, if you were to talk to kids today, they would have no idea what it was like to be around then. I think that's Nate's general premise.
I see.
Is that, like, by gum, if you weren't there, you just don't know how transcendent this man was. That seems to be the root of his argument. But, you know, it's an interesting. We have some more wacky ones here on the list here. Jason Jones, I'm not going to say this is a wacky one. John Stallworth, I mean, that's a pretty good vote right there. I'm not a Squealer fan, but I got to admit that's a good one. His wife, Samantha Jones, however, going with Matthew Dellavedova.
Apparently he plays soccer.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
I love me some Deli as much as the next guy, but I don't know if even he would be thinking he belongs on this
list. Is there
like
some Australian pygmy games or something like he was a part of? Or
I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how he may. I mean, like, he's a favorite of Samantha's, and I think, quite frankly, that's all it took. I think that's how Mrs. Jones ended up going on this one here.
Well, maybe she's, you know, not referring to his exploits as an athlete. He's just an underappreciated fella.
Could be. Yeah. He's personally.
He's a real gentleman. Loves his mother. I mean, he's just generally underappreciated by the public at large.
He's personally underappreciated. Nice. One of the most quality votes out of all of these ones that came in from original FDH Lounge dignitary Tim Faust, who is a big baseball expert, no question about it. Mickey Cochran. I texted him back immediately. I was like, bravo, man. That's a great vote. You know, people want to say Johnny Bench is the greatest catcher of all time, or this. Some people say Yogi Berra. But this is a name that should always be in the discussion, Chris, and it's not in the discussion enough of the time.
No, I was really impressed with that vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's thinking.
Yes.
That's being, you know, very thoughtful in your selection process.
Yeah, yeah. And hint, hint, hint. That may be one that I look fondly upon as we go further in this. Tom Denk, Mr. Flatstick, going with Al Order. That was an interesting one. So as I said, we have individual categories being referenced here as well. I think he's the
only... You didn't do that one in order, though.
No. No, that was...
I'm glad I got nobody else at the table laughing at that one. Yeah. And I thank you for that.
Are you going to use that on open mic night?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I have a...
He didn't run those races in order, kids.
Exactly. I'm also going to say Sakatumi and have a laughing box.
Steve Cervillo going with Barry Sanders. That's another one of these ones of like, for a guy that gets a lot of run as the greatest running back of all time, I don't exactly know on that one. Bob Glassman going with Albert Bell, that's a name that came up previously just in a discussion here in terms of what he did with those 1990s Indians teams. And again, because he didn't, kiss the asses of the sports writers, didn't win the MVP award, so I guess I could kind of see that. Dave Adams, I wish I could interrogate John here to see what his brother's thought process was, but he goes with Tim Duncan, who that's another one of these ones of a great player, one of the greatest of all time. Most would probably say top 10 of all time, although maybe some would consider him borderline, but that's an interesting vote by Dave.
Well, I think, and it hit me with Tim Duncan, and I think maybe people are thinking underappreciated and they're thinking modest in terms of their career.
Okay.
And in a way, I think maybe people are kind of transferring that to underappreciated.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm looking back on this list and seeing some people, you know, maybe their personality wasn't real flamboyant, but they just, you know, they did great work and they shined. But interesting one with Tim Duncan.
Yeah, I thought it was. That's the last of them from the votes not at the table here. Those of us sitting at the table reviewing these and who will be breaking the tie. The votes that we cast, starting with mine, Steve Yzerman, probably not a big surprise to anybody that was my vote, but my justification for that would be that if you're looking at the players of the 80s and the 90s, that the first two names that come tripping off everybody's tongue are Gretzky and Lemieux. And I feel like for everything that Yzerman accomplished, statistically as a leader, the first 20-year captain in the history of the league, multiple cup winner as a captain, that was something that tilted it to me because I felt like, again, there's a wide gap in terms of when people think Gretzky, Lemieux, and then whoever comes next. And I don't think there should be such a wide gap. So,
you know, I was doing a show in Detroit last week, Rick, mm-hmm. and you might appreciate this. I was in the middle of it was at this just hipster bar or whatever it was. There was like five comics that were there. And all of a sudden I'm in the middle of one of my sets and people are cheering. And I look over at the TVs at the bar, and they're watching the Red Wings game.
Yes.
And so I just instinctively, I'm like, oh, who is Steve Yzerman still on the team? Is that right, Sharon? And I'm just bringing up all these old Red Wings players from the 90s. Like, hey, is Brendan Shanahan still out there? Is Chris Osgood the goalie? He was pretty darn good. What about Chris Chelios?
I would hope at a hipster place that they would at least be popping for that, right? Were they laughing ironically?
One girl was, and then everybody else just started looking at their phones and on Tinder or whatever. I don't know what they're doing. Grindr.
Grinder.
That'd be funny if it was Grinder, actually. that would be very amusing, actually, if you guessed that successfully. All right, going around the table here, you're up next, Johnny, with another athlete who really made his bones in the Detroit area.
Well, yeah, speaking of modest, mine was Dennis Rodman. Seven-time defensive first-team player, led the NBA in rebounding, so the rebounding champion, seven straight years from 92 to 98. Five-time NBA champion, two-time All-Star. You know, he was the rebounding champion on three different teams as well. So,
okay,
that's what I was kind of looking at. I think he got, you know, through his own undoing, portrayed as this brash character later in the media, of course. But was a great player. I mean, leading the NBA in rebounds for seven straight years, that was the deciding factor for me.
That's right. Yeah, well, I mean, one, maybe the greatest pure rebounder of all time, Chris.
You know where he's not underappreciated?
Where?
North Korea.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in the world of geopolitics, he is renowned. No question about that. Up next, Tony, the vote that came in for you, this is an interesting one. Maybe not a lot of commonality with a lot of other Hall of Fame and first ballot Hall of Fame guys on this list here, but Darren Erstad, a guy who I don't know if I'm going to take a stab at this is where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. Two sports. Okay.
He was the punter on the 1994 Nebraska Cornhuskers national championship team.
Okay.
So he would have been in the NFL if he didn't go baseball, but mm-hmm. he was a damn good baseball player, really good center fielder, three-time Gold Glove winner, two-time All-Star. I believe he win a batting title? I got to see.
I think he did,
and then he won a World Series.
Yeah, I was going to say, was he on the 02 Angels?
Yes, he was.
Okay, he was.
And he was, I mean, he was around for 15 years, a really good player. So he was one of those guys that, yeah, he would have been in the NFL. And I know when I was looking at the list and what I could do for an underappreciated athlete, I didn't look at how great the athlete was and how he's not appreciated by the media. I'm talking about an athlete as a guy who played the two sports. And I saw there was another one that we'll get to on the list, like a Danny Ainge or a Charlie Ward or some of those other guys that I looked at that, or somebody who can – they may not be the greatest in the one sport, and you may not think of them at the top tier, but they were able to do multiple things and do them pretty well.
Well, let's break format here. I'm going to skip Anthony for a second because the most similar vote – probably was Chris.
Yeah.
And hearing Chris's thoughts on this here, let's stay with that, with your vote of Danny Ainge.
I agree with you in your analysis. That's how I interpreted this section as well. And my vote for Danny Ainge came because Danny Ainge is still the only person to be a first-team high school All-American in three sports, baseball,
okay,
football, and basketball. And he also played baseball for the Blue Jays before joining the Boston Celtics and becoming an eventual Celtic great. So you're talking about somebody who clearly was athletically gifted, you know, probably could have been an NFL quarterback as well had he decided to go in that route. So you're talking about somebody who accomplished a great deal in terms of his abilities, in terms of multiple sports, athletics, and I would say that most people don't have that kind of knowledge of his skill sets and would therefore classify him as underappreciated.
Danny Ainge, by the way, was with the Blue Jays in 1981 on May 15th when Len Barker threw his perfect game.
That's right.
And he was lifted for a pinch hitter, which was Ernie Witt, who flew out to center field to Rick Manning.
Oh, he would have been – I never knew he would have been the last batter.
He would have been the
okay.
last batter, and they lifted him for a pinch hitter. And then he promptly went on to greatness with the Celtics.
Did not know that. Okay. It – well
– the more you know.
Yeah.
We'll have the star going across.
Indeed. Like I'm looking through our past winners. I'm trying to remember what category this was because there's something that kind of triggered a thought here, and I'm not finding immediately. Maybe it was previously for best underappreciated athlete. I don't remember. Somebody in one of these categories, very similar to what you guys are talking about here, made a case for Jackie Robinson. And it was like, well, everybody knows him as the first black baseball player in the major leagues. I guess like at UCLA. You know, and he ran track, and I don't know if football was part of it, but it was like this ridiculous list of, like, intercollegiate lawn darts champion and this and that, and, like, all these ridiculous list of things that Jackie Robinson did.
Well, it's a lot like Jim Brown. I mean, mm-hmm. most people don't realize that Jim Brown is probably the greatest lacrosse player of
yep.
all time, and he's in the Lacrosse Hall of Fame. He was amazing at Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't consider Jim Brown underappreciated.
No. Perhaps for his hip toss off of balconies. I mean, there is that. That's a
that's a whole other topic and discussion.
There's a little bit of athleticism in that, is there not?
Yeah, what is it with that part of South Marginal? That, yeah. There's always some kind of weird cloud and stigma around it.
Was that the one? Was that the Hojo's?
Yeah, it was the Hojo.
That's the one. Okay.
It was the Hojo. He's throwing Asian women out there. allegedly.
I didn't even know the nationality. Thanks for breaking that news.
Wouldn't that be something? If we could have been there, we could have covered it live.
Yeah.
And then that would have been nice.
And then 3 hours later, he had to throw another one off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was feeling unfulfilled at that point.
Wait till the ACLU starts listening to this.
Yeah, exactly. So we are down to the Patron brothers here for the first round, and let's save the best one for last here. Oh, yeah. We'll go with Anthony's vote here for Jim Kelly, who made it to 4 straight Super Bowls.
You know, I actually tossed this around in my head for a long time. I actually had typed about 5 different people in that spot. When it comes down to it, what it comes down to is anytime you bring up the name Jim Kelly, with most people, you hear, oh, he sucks, he lost 4 Super Bowls. But people don't give him the credit of, well, he made it to 4 Super Bowls.
That's
right. He also did the K-gun offense, which a lot of quarterbacks after based their stuff on, and he was a foundation for a lot in the NFL. But the reason I went with underappreciated is because 90% of the time you hear, well, he lost 4 Super Bowls.
He made it to 4 Super Bowls. Thank you, Frank Reich.
Yeah. Also, by the way, if we're going to use your standard for busting things down here, Chris, there is a 30 for 30 now on the Bills teams that just made 4 Super Bowls.
Talking about how underappreciated that team is and how many players had to come out and say they made it to 4 Super Bowls.
Can you be underappreciated if there's a 30 for 30 that says you're underappreciated? If you've been celebrated on national television?
Well, again, this comes back to the argument of the definition of the word, or at least someone's concept of underappreciated.
So I agree
wholeheartedly with Anthony about Jim Kelly as an athlete, mm-hmm. and how he isn't really appreciated, I think, as one of the great quarterbacks because they didn't win at least one of them. But you know, he's in the Hall of Fame. You know, he's a legend.
Mm-hmm.
And a cancer survivor.
Yeah, he is. So,
and they appreciate him in Buffalo.
They do indeed. They certainly do. Last up here, there's a name that doesn't so much fit real well with some of the other names on the list here. And that name is former NFL kicker Matt Barr. And here to explain that vote is the man who cast it, Matt Patron.
Well, my thought on that was just any kicker in general.
Okay. You
wouldn't let me say any kicker in general.
That's right.
How many games are won or lost by a field goal?
Okay.
So when the kicker goes out there, all of the pressure on the whole game a lot of times ends up on the kicker.
Okay.
So in saying Matt Barr, I just came up with, well, okay, he was an old kicker and his name is Matt, and let's just throw him in there for a name. But
okay,
I wanted
so
a kicker.
So there
general.
Was some science involved. Okay.
So I wanted a kicker. I
okay.
wanted a kicker, and Matt Barr is a good kicker. I mean, he was really good. At, you know,
he was a good kicker. Yes.
But
surprised you didn't put Garo Yeprimian on there.
But how many? Like how
when
many
he,
games
when
are
he kicked the ham out the window in the Odd Couple episode. Keek.
But how many games are won and lost by the
down.
Kicker?
Yeah. A lot of them are. Yeah, true.
And the pressure goes on him, and he's underappreciated.
Yeah, well, I mean, as our child friend, Mr. Galloway here, could tell you, Adam Vinatieri won 3 Super Bowls basically by kicking a field goal there at the end. So there are other examples, perhaps, other than Matt Barr that one might have used. But okay, all right. So there's the
But Matt Barr would be underappreciated.
Right. Yeah, well, not by Matt, but certainly by the rest of humanity. So, okay, there's that. So, okay, And this makes me very, very relieved that we have no subsequent categories with ties. We're just going through kind of breaking it down subsequently, because there could be some blood and sweat here in getting through this one. So let's start. And for somebody who has had thoughts on this category and the fact that it's going to be a tiny, tiny plurality on this, Chris, why don't you get us started here? Where do you want to start off on the second ballot? I'm all ears.
I'm going to make a motion that there not be a second ballot. that there is not a consensus on the definition of underappreciated, and that there is not a consensus in terms of an athlete. So I would move that, like all Hall of Fames, that I sometimes, when I question sometimes the inclusions when they have certain votes, we don't have to fill it today. It can remain empty in the Pantheon until there is somebody that has stepped forward and there is a consensus.
I
agree.
Let's
put it to a vote. Yeah,
I would second that.
I would agree with Chris.
Because okay. I think we can even clarify this category if
yeah.
we hadn't thought about it.
I think so.
And make it something where we could come up with a stronger consensus.
I may have been a little vague, perhaps. Perhaps. Perhaps, but yeah, vague-ish. That's as far as I'll go in that direction. What do you think, Tony? I'm kind of leaning
here,
towards
here.
This as well. Yeah, pull the plug. We gonna
I
do
agree.
That.
I agree.
All right, so it's unanimous.
The
Dundee will not be awarded. This is a first. I did not expect this here today, ladies and gentlemen. I thought this was going to be a long, drawn out final battle here, and it might have been if we were forced to vote. But Johnny, apparently, it ends quick and easy.
Well, I think this is the right thing to do. Although I will have to say comes to mind Jerry Korek, kicker of the Cleveland Browns 1990, which finally got the Browns off the schneid against Denver. But
as long as we're going for
no.
old Browns kickers, yeah.
I think we need to rethink this category.
I think it's ironic that we finished the underappreciated athlete category by underappreciating everyone on this list by not voting any of
And maybe that's what's fitting. Maybe that's entirely fitting. I'll tell you what, though. I would have gone for Mickey Cochran on the second ballot. I'll just say that. I think Faust had it right. If I wasn't able to vote for my guy on the second ballot, which I wouldn't have, I probably would have gone for Mickey Cochran. But, well, history made here today in the 9th FDH Lounge Pantheon. For the first time, there is no winner in a category. Underappreciated athlete remains vacant.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.